Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Kim and the band again for that great, wonderful, inspiring theme song, Clouds of Abundance. It is another day in paradise. Yes, paradise here in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome all into our Paradise One studio where every day is a holiday and a party never stops. Yay!
Yay!
All righty. Yes, I am Nazim Rashid. You guessed right. Author of Reconnected, How to Be Mentor to Your Child Self, with our program based on this book today, and host of the Reconnected show we're listening to right now. Okay, we're going to start with our usual opening prayer. Like I've mentioned before, I always have my little disclaimer here. Whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves, and in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I am using God as a universal theme and is not relegated to any particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for life you have given us today. Thank you for the knowledge of how to receive and benefit from your grace, mercy, and blessings. Thank you for showing us how to open up within and tap the abundance you have placed within each and every one of us. Thank you for the angels you have sent amongst us, reminding us that we are on the right path. Thank you for the assurance of protection, guidance, and manifestation of our divine destiny. Amen. Okay, we have our show notes. Dorothy, take it away.
Let us hear from you as we learn the needs of our child self. The chapters in the book that address these needs are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addictions, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address in our book club at cox.net. That's N as in Nazim, R as in Rashid, book club, in our book club at cox.net. He sends out blogs and book excerpts every month from fans who connect with him. Book-related information such as book signing dates, webinars, and workshops are sent from there as well. The book Reconnected will be released and available by the spring of this year. Nazim?
Well, okay. All right, then. Reconnected. This is the Reconnected Show, the key to personal power. Wouldn't we all like to have the key to our personal power? Well, you have it. This is a personal growth program designed with your inner peace in mind. The discussions will be based on my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. Reconnected is for those adults who want to create real internal change in their lives by addressing significant emotional events in their past which are affecting them presently. It is also for parents who want vital information in raising their genius young souls. Mentors who can appreciate additional tools for their mentees, and teachers who would cherish more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. And also couples, especially today, wanting a better relationship, can also benefit from the personal growth tools being offered. Okay, you know, we have a happy news segment. As I've said before, we have happy news going on all the time here and abroad. Yes, happy news going on all the time. So we want to actually promote it on the show. And who knows what? We might have an idea of having a network. Matter of fact, I was thinking about calling it the APN. You know, you have CNN and all these other acronyms out there. APN, all positive news. How about that? APN Network. Okay, a little thought seed out there. All right, with happy news, we have at our international and national news desk, Dorothy, take it away.
The title of this article is Quadriplegic Man Sets Record for Fastest Hands-Free Typing. We've got to give props to the amazing Hank Torres, who lost use of his arms and legs after a hand-gliding accident 30 years ago. For setting the Guinness World Record for fastest hands-free typing.
Wow.
Hank followed the following phrase, Hank typed the following phrase. The razor-toothed piranhas of the Green Era, Sarah Salamis, and Pygocentrus are the most ferocious freshwater fish in the world. In reality, they seldom attack a human. In 83.09 seconds, last Friday, at the Assistive Technology Industry Association Conference in Orlando, Florida, Hank had a nice setup to help achieve his record. In fact, we are learning about this because along with a head tracking system called Tracker Pro and a PC, Hank uses the Swipe software keyboard found on many Android phones. The maker of Tracker Pro, AbleNet, now includes the Swipe keyboard in the software bundle. Not only is it amazing that Hank can do this with the keyboard, it's a pretty amazing demonstration of the keyboard's functionality itself. You can go to www.youtube.com and put in GWR, that's G as in girl, GWR underscore hands dash free underscore typing underscore edit dot move dot MOV to see Hank Torres perform this awesome feat. That's pretty fast typing.
Wow, isn't that something? Now, hold tight now. What did he have to type again? What was the task?
The razor-tooth piranhas of the genera Serrasalamus and Pygocentrus are the most ferocious freshwater fish in the world. In reality, they seldom attack a human.
Mm.
That's what he typed. And he did it in 83.09 seconds.
Oof. All right. Well, I encourage everybody to go to that YouTube site there and see it, because they have him actually doing it. He has, looks like kind of like a straw in his mouth, but he actually blows on the, it's a picture of the keyboard. He blows on the letters on the keyboard to spell out the words. So he's actually puffing, I guess, the letters there and doing that and creating or writing this this piece here. He did it all in 83 seconds. It's amazing. So you just have to see it. It's one of those kind of things you have to see, because it's hard to describe, but at least we have the YouTube reference there. You can go there and see him actually do it. It's amazing, you know, amazing, you know. And, you know, people say, well, you're disabled. He's paraplegic and so forth. You can't do anything. Well, look what he just did, you know. And now he's in a Guinness Book World of Records. So that's amazing there. All right, then. So today's theme, communication and listening skills. We're doing a nice series on communication and listening skills, that this is so, so very important and needed out here, is that, you know, people talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and there's not connection going on, and we wonder why. So it affects relationships, it affects businesses, it affects the parent-child relationships, and it just affects everything. You know, it really does. It's better if we can connect and bond. So, part three. Now, this is relationship focus. It's actually a part two on relationships. Okay, I'll do a recap of last week. It was very, very interesting with Jeff Gaisley, and it took me a while to get this, but I got it, and I'm going to deliver it. Of course, Jeff's going to see if I did it correctly. Anyway, here we go. Last week, we had marriage and family therapist Jeff Gaisley speak to us about communication and listening skills in relationships. Jeff was saying that love is feeling-based, not thinking-based. So, when you communicate with your mate, you're focusing many times on how you are feeling. This is related to your mate as you're opening up with, I am feeling this way or that way. I feel sad when you do this, and I would appreciate it if you would do that instead. If the eye contact is appropriate and the body language is not threatening and the tone matches the feeling, that would be easy for an assertive statement and be considered good communication skills. If your mate is speaking to you of some concern of theirs, you are going to pay close attention to what they are saying, paraphrasing back to them what they are saying to make sure you are hearing them correctly. You are then going to validate how they are feeling behind what they are saying, which is a feeling statement. I can understand your position and or I can appreciate it, even though I don't necessarily agree with it. Remember, we're talking about healthy positions. Validating statements recognize the feeling of the other person and signifies a sense of caring about the mate. Validating statements are also an attempt in relating to the mate in that you are trying to understand who they are. People like to and have a need to be recognized for their uniqueness and their feelings. Validating statements satisfy this need. Jeff mentioned a, quote, I-thou relationship and an I-it relationship. Again, I-thou relationship and an I-it relationship. An I-it relationship is when we objectify people. You know, people are seen as neutral objects devoid of any feeling connection. Okay? Where in an I-thou relationship, you're saying, I recognize your uniqueness and value it, even though I am not agreeing with your position. If the goal of communication is to understand who each of you are and what both of your positions are, and you are trying to resolve an issue between you two in a win-win position, then you two are going to almost always get along and feel pretty good about each other. But on the contrary, if I need to either win or defend myself, then we're going to fight on one level or another. We're conditioned to have this kind of win-defending kind of posture in this culture. So you have dialogues and media presentations that display this kind of communication battling, and that's what we have right now with the reality shows and so forth, and we have it all the time. Shame seems to be a prevalent disposition many are displaying in these kinds of interactions. In shame, you take things very personally. You add words. Mm-hmm. You add words unto what the other person is saying to you. Words that are attacking you or are against your position, causing you to take a defensive posture against them. Yes. Now, right there, I want to add my little caveat here, is that keep that in mind. We're adding words. We're just interjecting our own words that they aren't even saying. It's our words, but we're projecting that on them as if they're saying it to us, but they aren't saying it to us. And we're reacting to words that we're actually adding in there, you see, which breaks your communication entirely. The other person has no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, all right. The connection between you two has been broken. The communication is trying to understand and resolve, and the minute we are not doing that, we're into winning and or defending. Jeff talked about abandonment dynamics and how this plays into the communication process. He said abandonment does not mean being left on some desert, but when love has been taken away. Some were brought up to feel like they have to be perfect, and when they don't measure up, they are made to feel bad and unapproved. This is a form of abandonment. We are abandoned when we are emotionally looked upon as not good enough or subhuman. This is done with the tone of voice, which signifies disapproval. When we feel abandoned from our past, we try to resolve this abandoned feeling through our communications with our mates. In this case, the abandoned one picks someone subconsciously who also has abandonment issues themselves and who acts like our parents who abandoned us. Mm-hmm. So we hit each other's buttons, thus recreating the fight from the past. Jeff related this example of abandonment. So you got a girl in the family, a little girl. She will feel abandoned by her father because he's working all the time and not spending needed time with her. Her mother is spending an enormous amount of time with the kids, making up for what is not being done by the father. They have a little brother in the family. He will start to feel smothered by the mother. Now, fast forwarding with these two examples, you have an emotionally abandoned girl marrying a boy who has feelings of smothering from his mother. The girl is going to be wanting more attention, and the boy is going to be feeling a repetition of smothering feelings. He pulls away, and the past feelings just repeat their cycle. So in the room, you now have emotionally two sets of parents and the two children with the unresolved issues. On this level, the children are not able to communicate effectively due to the unresolved emotional past. They are still children and don't have the mature ability to communicate. Jeff said that in communication, the intent has to be clear. If the intent is to resolve an issue and understand, then you're going to match this intent with the manner of communication you present. You have to monitor yourself in the communication process. If you find that you are getting over emotional, then you're probably in your child state. Do you guys hear that? Let me say it again. If you find that you're getting over emotional, then you are probably in your child state. Your child will tend to be abusive in the way that it communicates. It will be attacking and defending. It can also take a more passive, withdrawing form by refusing to participate at all. Like physical wounds, emotional wounds can get infected and become worse with time. Mm-hmm. This is why as we get older, sometimes you get more and more bitter. Jeff was saying that some people are livid about their partner feeling the unresolved needs from their past, and they expect their partner to fill them. That's the problem, because you cannot be the parent and the partner at the same time. This creates an incestuous relationship, which won't work. And at this point, the marriage is over. Even though there are a lot of marriages who continue, but it's really, really a dysfunctional scene when you look at them and experience their presence. We have to confront whatever issues we had as a child, and then we can interact as adults in an equal-to-equal status. When you observe relationships that operate in this fashion, you see calm and peace surrounding them. Jeff said that when he sees couples in his practice, they complain about four things generally: sex, money, parenting, general communication. But the real issues are, do you love me? Do you respect me? Do you care for me? Are you shaming me? Are we equals? He said that trust is a thread that goes through all the issues. If you trust that your mate is going to have your needs in mind, then you don't have to protect yours so much. A trusting relationship is a low-maintenance relationship, where a non-trusting one is a high-maintenance one. The key to successful relationships and a must for healthy communications is to still be in love chemically after the first year and a half, found infatuation insane period, okay, and be in love rationally. To still be in love chemically and be in love rationally. Jeff said that he finds out how their childhood was and if their child self has unresolved issues or not. This will tell him where the relationship is headed. He said that we get hurt so early in our lives and we don't have the capacity to understand what all those emotional issues are, and so quite naturally, we work them out in our adult relationships. Unfortunately, we have to then go through the pain and also new self-discoveries. Those unresolved feelings need to be reactivated, and this happens with someone who mirrors the person who caused the pain of our past. Ooh, did you get that? Those unresolved feelings need to be reactivated, and this happens with someone who mirrors the person who caused the pain of our past. Through this new relationship process, we discover unknown strengths and weaknesses, and now we can make the necessary adjustments. All right, today we have Jeff Gaisley joining us again as we continue our discussion from last week. There are dysfunctional family roles that many of us have played out in our past and in our present lives that hinder our communication and listening skills in our relationships. We'll address these dynamics and how each of them resurface in our relationships that cause havoc in our relationships. Once you know what is causing the disconnect in your life, you can now remove the barrier. Enjoy being reconnected. Wonderful. Jeff, did you get that? Jeff, are you with us? Uh-oh. Did I? Oh, there you are.
I am. Now yep, I'm here. You did perfect.
Oh, good, 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 good. Wonderful. I'm glad because I really wanted to hear your feedback there because I really did my best here to relate with what you were saying last week.
Actually, I was amazed that we did that in just an hour, but, yeah, you did a really, really good job on it.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. You know, so many heavy things and great things were being said, and as I was listening to the program and writing them down, I was just really playing a lot of seeds in my own mind because, as we know, we're all human beings, and things come up, and we just forget our real position to take, and emotions kind of can sometimes take the forefront, and we just kind of react. And you know, not in a really, you know, awful, ugly way, but sometimes, you know, we aren't taking our best position. And the idea when you're saying that when we see our emotions that are taking a front seat, that's an indication that the child self is actually taking the front seat, and we need to kind of look at that.
Absolutely. And actually, brain chemistry comes into that as well. The emotional part of our brain is in centered mostly in the limbic system,
mm-hmm.
which is a bit more of a primitive brain than our prefrontal cortex, which is the logical adult part of our brain in the forehead. And so when we get overwhelmed and hurt by having something hit our child, our unresolved child, the emotions become overpowerful and often block out a lot of the thinking from the prefrontal cortex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it actually is really kind of quite natural for that response or reaction to happen because of the small part of the brain kind of be overwhelmed by the gang onslaught by the two-thirds.
Absolutely. And, you know, the prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed until 25. And so we get a kind of slow start on trying to keep that part active because, in a real sense, if we learn how to keep the prefrontal cortex on, even when we're feeling tremendous emotion, then we can work out our issues on the spot and have our adult really talk to our partner about it. And that's really the key to keep things calm enough.
Wow. You know, that's not easy to do. And I think that programs like this, Reconnected Show, and I, you know, just knowing that we all need to be constantly directing ourselves. That's why I like affirmations. That's why I like meditation and you're doing conscious thinking every single day. That is a real help for us to stay on the path we'd like to be on instead of being always apologizing all the time, you know?
Absolutely. If we continue to practice, we gain more and more control over that part of our brain. Just like if we're working out, we're going to have more control over whatever part of our body we're working out or any sport that we're doing.
Oof, you're right about that. All right, Jeff, I wanted to slide into the transcend to our areas here, and this is very important too because, you know, a lot of people have no idea why they act the way they do and so forth. And let's talk about this because I know that we had different dysfunctional roles we played. A lot of us have played, and let's talk about why they're there and what they are, because I have a list here, but I want to kind of let you kind of start that off. Why are they
sure.
there? What are they?
Well, basically what happens is most of this research came from the mid-70s and 80s with alcoholic and drug-addicted families. And mm-hmm. what we started to realize, well, let me backtrack, originally all that was looked at was the alcoholic or drug-addicted parent.
Okay.
And we kind of assumed that that was the problem, and if we could get him or her to stop what they're doing, then we send them back to the family and absolutely everything is fine. And the assumption was the family itself was very healthy. And gradually what happened is it didn't work. It was kind of a piecemeal approach. And when the alcoholic got back, the partner very often was really angry at him because it had taken so long for them to get it. And they kind of wanted to play the same roles because they were used to it. And so it finally dawned on clinicians that the wife or the husband at home
mm-hmm.
probably had a problem in and of themselves, and that problem was identified by the term codependence, which means overly worried about the partner to a point where you kind of forget your own needs. And so we started to realize that the partners in a chemically dependent family were overly involved with each other and
mm-hmm.
didn't really have time for the kids. And that
mm.
left a great power vacuum. And the kids, of course, would try to pick up the slack just like with any system, nature hates a vacuum, and they're going to try to help. So kids became adults emotionally long before their time and tried to help out and deal with parents who at times were acting infantile.
Okay. Now, also, now Jeff, right there, before you go on there, now, mm-hmm. wouldn't the other party, the more aggressive one, wouldn't they also be considered the codependent too?
The aggressive one, I'm not sure.
Well, I'm sorry, let me set up. You got the alcoholic husband or abusive husband. You got the wife who is just enabling that husband, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's codependent, and she's overly involved in him. Her focus is in him so much, neglecting the kids, as you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in his position, wouldn't he be considered that also as a codependent?
Would he be codependent as well?
Yes.
I believe that everyone in the system, in a chemically dependent system, or in what's called a dysfunctional family system. And the way that that term came about is that we started to realize that a lot of the rules and the craziness that was happening in chemically dependent families were happening in other families without chemical dependence.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, what you see is certainly addictive behavior on top with almost everyone. Not necessarily chemical. So an alcoholic would be addicted to the alcohol. The codependent would be addicted to the alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But with dysfunctional families, they're usually addicted to work or to relationship or something. And then underneath that is almost always codependence.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath that is individuation issues or a lack of really growing up.
Ah. Okay. And right there, you would look at how they came up, because here we're talking about a dysfunctional family and all the dynamics there, but then if you have, say you got the wife who has this, she's really so entrenched in the husband's, husband period, neglecting the kids, then you got to look at the family she came from and where that originated from.
Absolutely. This is an interlocking system. You know, as we were talking last week, if we have unresolved issues, and usually everyone has 1 to 3,
mm-hmm.
then what we do is we look for somebody in the present day when we're adults who will be an interlocking member of that problem. So people who grew up with alcoholic parents often become either alcoholics and marry a codependent, who also came from a dysfunctional family, or they'll marry somebody who, it just kind of works that way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, also. And also, looking at codependents, make sure we're really triply clear here. We have the, say, the alcoholic husband, abusive husband. Now, he's codependent on a couple of different things here, but he's also codependent on that wife to be the one holding him up a lot of times too. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Basically, what you've got is two people who haven't completely grown up or individuated, and what's happening is they feel that they need each other too much, and that makes them angry at themselves and at their partner.
Mm.
Because it's not nice, or it doesn't feel good, to have to need someone. Wanting someone is an entirely different thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's good.
I'm going to do a segue here, because actually I have a whole segment of codependency coming up here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is great. That's why I like how when people, those of you who are actually following the sequence of the themes we have on the show, you'll see a kind of a common thread going through, and right now I see a real heavy one. And so I'm going to do a segue right now to kind of go focus on what we're talking about specifically, because codependency is another series we're going to do specifically. And so if you look at, Jenny, if you can talk about the different dysfunctional roles that
sure.
have been labeled, and then talk about what they are, why they're there, and how that impacts the current dysfunctional family they're in, and also how, as they get older, how it impacts their life.
Absolutely. So what happens is, because the parents at the top are having so many difficulties, it feels to the kids like a crisis situation 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And what they try to do is they try to fill the power vacuum and take care of not only themselves, but of their parents.
Oh.
And at a time when they're wholly unable to do that, and it's amazing how well they actually do. So what occurs is the firstborn child is usually considered the family hero. What they tend to do is become what's called a parentified child, a child who acts like a parent before their time.
Mm.
They will try to do a number of things. They'll try to be super responsible and take care of themselves. They'll try to take care of any of the younger kids, and often by controlling them and ordering them about to take the pressure off of mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And very often what they'll do is try to take care of mom and dad by pitching in where they aren't needed, trying to get them to stop fighting. They'll do all kinds of tricks to get them to calm down. And the difficulty is that, of course, it doesn't work because they don't have the ability to make other people change. No one has that ability.
Mm.
The only way things are going to get better is if mom and dad stop their stuff, work out their own issues, and get better themselves. So the family hero has to take all their emotional and dependence needs and push them down so that they don't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll focus on taking care of everyone else and trying to be perfect. Now, what's going to happen is they're going to feel like a failure.
Oh.
Because it's never good enough. They're going to be very perfectionistic, very controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of person that will come out and try to find a project in their friends or their mates.
Mm.
And they'll try to fix them.
Okay.
And if you're going to fix somebody, the more broken they are, the better. And so they tend to get very attracted to people who need help. Now, that's the negative side, because a big part of that is they're trying to get their own self-esteem met by fixing.
Okay.
But on the positive side, they really care about people, and those are usually the healthcare professionals of the world.
Oh. Oh, okay.
I'd say 99% of the people are nurses, therapists, that's teachers. Those are the family heroes.
Oh, I see. All right, now let's talk about how this impacts on their, well, I guess pro and con on the communication styles in their relationships.
Usually the communication will be directive, and in oftentimes it will be authoritative and rather demeaning without really realizing it. They'll often talk in declarative statements instead of how they see things. They'll say, this is the way it is. And when you say this is the way it is to people, other people get their back up.
Oh.
They don't like it.
If I
tell you what I think, Nazim, then what I'm doing is treating you like an equal. If I tell you how it is, it sounds like I somehow know better than you. And that's offensive.
I see. Okay, I see.
So what I ask my couples to do is to talk in terms of kind of possibilities. So if I tell you that it seems to me that this is what's happening. That's a really respectful style of communication. But if I say, well, you know, you did this and you did that, and this is why you did it, even if I'm right, you're going to be mad at me.
I see. Okay, sure. So they aren't good listeners then, doesn't seem like.
Usually not. Now, there's another part to them, and that's the overly nurturing, overly taking care of, overly rescuing, and at times forgetting what they need. So they could be overly solicitous to people, but then as they're doing that, they're getting more and more resentful, and then they tend to blow up all of a sudden, and you get a Jekyll and Hyde sort of a situation.
Wow. Okay, I see. Man. All right, so, okay. And now how about the pronoun?
How about what?
It was a pro, it was a con. Now, how about the positive side of communication? Is there
a positive
side? Well, the positive
side, or these are really caring people. I mean, they were in a difficult situation. They really were worried about people. They want to help. They truly care. And when they're not resentful, and if they feel that the person they're helping is really appreciative, they'll do anything for them. Now, that's good up to a point, but they tend to not take care of their own needs. And very often what you have is a contract without realizing that it's a contract. So let's say that I give to you and I give to you and I give to you, and you don't realize it, but I expect something next weekend.
Oh.
And
oh.
If you're not available next weekend to help me move or whatever, then I'm going to act like you broke a contract. And
okay.
You didn't make that contract. A gift is supposed to be something that has no strings attached to it.
Exactly, sure. Right. Okay,
so
that's...
You get negative on, and positive on both sides.
So that's the hero. Okay, interesting. All right, let's move to the next one. What's the next one on your list?
The next child very often is called the scapegoat.
Scapegoat.
Well, actually, let me back up, too, because it's really important to talk about how this is kind of a mobile. In a really healthy family, each person is a separate human entity. But in a dysfunctional family, it's more like each person has a role, a separate role that makes them a stereotype.
Oh.
And they're almost like a single, a multi-cell organism in a family rather than their own person. And so the family hero brings to the family a sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
These kids look like mini adults, and so the family can say, okay, well, you know, Dad drinks too much, but look at Junior. Junior's terrific. We can't be doing all that bad.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay, got you, sure.
Now, the scapegoat, what they provide to the family is a place to displace their anger. So if the real problem is the alcoholic behavior, now in some ways that's a bit simplistic because in my mind everyone in here has a problem, but usually the biggest thing on the table, the elephant in the room, is the drinking or the drug use.
Right, exactly.
And so if mom and dad really dealt with that and couldn't fix it, they'd wind up getting divorced. So instead of doing that, which is scary for everyone, what's going to happen often is they focus on one kid who's the bad kid, who is the black sheep, who is the screw-up, you know, that of what's happening.
Right.
And usually what's occurring is that each of these roles, the kids kind of get elected for the roles, without anyone saying anything. But it gets reinforced over and over again. So the second child usually is looked at as somebody who's making trouble.
Okay.
They often tend to feel picked on. They're very angry.
Mm-hmm.
They feel mistreated. They lose hope in gaining a position on the positive side of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so very often become the rebel or Jesse James.
Oh,
I
see.
If I'm going to be labeled, I might as well be really good at being a screw-up.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, so this person might be prone to or might develop ADD. You know, is that a candidate for that kind of behavior in a household, a little hurricane household?
ADD is a genetic condition and really has more to do with biochemistry, but this person will often not do well in school, will be rebellious, often be precocious, get into alcohol and drugs early.
Okay.
They'll take on their parents and say, shove it.
Okay, I see. So they can take on characteristics of an ADD person, but it's still a separate condition now. Okay.
Yeah, you've got to have a chemical genetic condition
mm-hmm.
to have ADD. But
mm-hmm.
The scapegoat basically gets blamed for everything.
I see, I see.
And so, mm-hmm. and that therefore they don't have to look at the alcoholic behavior. And they get angry and they fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would happen later on in life, this would be somebody who would probably have more of a chance of abusing alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And their coping technique would be in communication, either to yell or slam the door and go out to the bar and drink, which, of course, is a tremendously mature coping technique.
I see. I see.
But the one that happens often. So up yours, I'm out of here.
Okay, so their communication skills will be really under par, you're saying there, huh?
Yes, yeah, just being sarcastic with it.
Okay, I see. So, all right, I see. Interesting. So as you're saying these things, for those women and men out there who might be dealing with that kind of personality, if you see symptoms, like if someone just is – has a very low tolerance, slamming their doors, it has to always escape and go out and get relief, they might be a scapegoat.
Absolutely.
I see. Okay, next one on the list.
Third child is often called, now remember that the firstborn usually is the family hero, the secondborn is usually the scapegoat, but that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
The third child looks at the family scene and sees the first child being 87 when they're 10 and says, I really don't like this. This doesn't look like fun. And they look at the scapegoat who's getting killed, often for very little reason, and they don't want any part of that. And so what they do is they pull inside and feel lonely and scared and unloved and still have the same feeling of I need to be perfect. But what they do with it is they become the chameleon. They become anything they think you need.
Mm.
So these are kids who tend to deal with their anger by getting fat, by eating too much, by oftentimes they'll get pregnant early. The tendency will be to go out with somebody and figure out what that person likes, and they'll just try to provide it.
Now hold on. Now, what was that label called? That role is called something.
That's what the label is called.
Yeah. What that person called that role?
It's lost child.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, lost child.
Got you.
So what will happen very often is these people are incredibly hard to figure out how they're really feeling, and they might not even know how they feel.
Okay.
And again, that could result in getting angry at some point in time. But
mm-hmm.
very often, these would often be the type of people who are very loving and very giving and you don't know they're angry, and then after 5 years, they say, you know, I'm not getting my needs met, I'm divorcing you now, and you've never heard that they were upset.
Oh.
And so it comes as a complete shock.
Okay, okay. So they have a hard time expressing their feelings.
If they express it, they're afraid either that they're going, you know, that they're going to get nailed for some reason, and they're trying to make everyone happy in a different sort of a way than the family hero, but it's closely aligned. So, and they seem to have an equal chance of either becoming an addict or codependent, specializing in one or the other.
Now, is there a positive side regarding to communication style with this lost child?
You know, the only positive side that I would see is they become terrific at kind of figuring out what the other one needs and what's going on with them. Mm. But they aren't keeping up their end of it.
Also, they're really better listeners. Is that right?
Yeah, they're really good listeners, really good analyzers. They'll be able to kind of know what's happening, but they aren't including themselves in the equation much.
I see.
So these are people that are very often silent, and you kind of have to guess what they're doing. They often will agree too much with you and not necessarily really agree deep down.
Okay, so if someone has a lost child as a mate, they're going to probably have to ask more questions and do more probing to find out what's really going on inside. Is that correct?
That and the biggest thing is to really reassure that person that they're okay, that you'll accept them even if they disagree with something you're saying.
I see. So therefore, they kind of need a little more assurance.
Yeah.
So it seemed like the in relationship, the lost child, their mate will have to be a little more, I wouldn't say stronger, but a little more assertive or a little more have a little more insight to find out how to communicate or how to connect with the lost child.
That's true, but you know, I say that for everyone, you know, because I think that 95% of us come from some form of dysfunctional family because the culture is so dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, what's really important is what a good marriage takes is that you match on your adult side, but you recognize when your child is up and can deal with that, and then from your adult, share with your partner what's happening.
But
you have to be aware and know your partner's child and to reassure that child that you're not their enemy.
You don't
want to be their savior, because the individual person has to save their own child. But you have to let them know that you're no threat to that child. You essentially are in love with both the child and the adult.
But your
partnership is with the adult.
Mm-hmm. So it's still good to kind of find out, this what still helps communication process, if we still know from which role we both came from.
You bet.
Is that correct? Okay.
You bet.
Okay, because then you can help, because we all need help. All of us need help. And so it's important, because say if I'm a scapegoat, if that's my background there, then I guess the other person, you know, first assuming that I've already reconciled issues and I'm on the healthy adult side here, and knowing that that's my past there, then my mate would be a little more assuring that I'm okay, and there's no reason to be reactionary and so forth.
Right. See, and what a scapegoat would often do is show anger when they're hurt. And so you've got the partner would have a choice at that point. Do they want to engage the angry part? I wouldn't do that. I would go to the hurt part. I would say, you know, hun, do you feel like I'm picking on you? Because that's not my intent.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that hopefully calms them down, then I can let them know that I didn't like the way they said something, and that
right.
there's no need to, you know, to look at me at the, as the enemy. But at first, I'm going to go right to the child and talk to her or him.
Mm-hmm. All right, now Jeff, there's a fourth role. Didn't we leave one out? Is there another one?
Yep. There's the mascot, and what the mascot does is brings some humor to the situation, because this is not fun family stuff. And so this person gets kind of a free pass on being sarcastic as hell, as long as it's looked at as funny.
Okay.
And these are people who kind of stay juvenile delinquents throughout life, but charming ones.
Oh.
Although if you're at 38, it's starting to look a little weird. But these are people who their communication style is to not talk sincerely as much as to tease and to joke and you kind of have to guess whether it really is something that they're bothered with, and usually it is.
Okay. And now help me here. Now, as they're getting older and they're getting into relationships, which ones are they drawn to? Who's attracted to them?
Well, the very often the family hero would find a mascot charming, because they'd be a project. The lost child usually is feeling pretty depressed. They could go for really anyone, but family hero or mascot would probably be best. Best in terms of recreating the issue. The family hero almost always grabs a scapegoat, and vice versa.
Oh, I see. And how are their communication styles? I mean, like, is it pretty smooth?
No. Nope. Usually the scapegoat is screwing up, and the family hero is telling, either trying to rescue or telling him or her how they should shape up.
Wait. So therefore, if the mascot is drawn to me, hero, you know, and so what he's saying is they still are having this subconscious need to reconcile, because they're not going to get along.
Sure.
Okay.
Right. Well, the family hero and the scapegoat and the family hero and the mascot would be very, very similar kinds of relationships for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is none of these people can be happy, because what they're trying to get is two things. They're trying to get their partner to act as a parent to them,
uh-huh.
and they're trying to resolve their own early pain, which can't be done through another person. But what it can do is bring the issue up, because it's so painful, if you then start working on your own stuff.
Okay. All right. Now, going back to the mascot again, and a say for someone, you know, looking at the healthy side, they've already have reconciled some of the issues of their child self, but they got this in their background, and so they are with someone else. They've got the mascot, you know, mascot male, and so. What would the healthy female mate have to do or be in order to be okay with this person?
Well, I think what they'd have to do, first of all, if the person was too much stuck in their mascot, they wouldn't be with them.
Right.
But if both people are somewhat, if they've worked through a large part of this, then what happens again is, let's say the mascot doesn't do something around the house, okay? Which is childlike behavior, if it's
right.
their responsibility. And
right.
the family hero spouse says, you know, hun, why didn't you do this? What the mascot would tend to do is kind of make a joke of it.
Okay.
You know, grin and say, oh, I don't know, just time got away.
Yeah.
And And so the tendency is the family hero would say, what the hell does that mean? You know, and so instead, what she would do, let's make it her, is she would say, you know, hon, I know that, you know, the tendency is to kind of make a joke of things, but this really isn't funny to me. But they would do it in a calmer voice, and they'd try to reach the adult part.
I see.
And
all
reach
right.
it with detachment. And that's,
and,
that's huge.
That's important. Yeah,
if I'm working on me, then I'm detached about whether the other person gets it. And the more I'm detached, and that doesn't mean that I don't care, but that I don't get locked up into these roles, then the other person doesn't have such of a cue to fight back. It doesn't hit their child as much.
Right, exactly.
But if we're all hyper-emotional, it's child to child that's being hit.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a issue there for sure. And we see that. And now looking at the, again, the healthy side here, if the mascot has, you know, reconciled their past, but, you know, the other person, say the hero wife, you know, just knows that, but, you know, also knows that, you know, they're respectful and they're not, you know, acting out that in their adult life now, but that's kind of, you know, in their past there. What kind of reassurances or what kind of position would the hero wife have to have with that mascot husband? You know, is there anything that they have to just do or just make sure that they feel okay?
What each person would have to do is reassure the other person that, you know, that they aren't looking down on them. But what they're doing is they're asking them to jump up into their adult place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way that I can say it. If I know that if I'm connected with a mascot and they're simply trying to dodge a situation with humor, I'm going to say, hun, I really need to talk seriously to you. You know, I really want to connect with you because I care about you.
Well, exactly, sure.
That makes it hard to come back with another joke.
All right. And, of course, now looking at I'm always trying to see things from different perspectives. And this person is you know, they're totally responsible, but, you know, because of their mascot past, you know, they made light of things, but things are still taken care of. And it's okay. You know, things are still being done, but, you know, they're kind of floating and they kind of, you know, take the lighter side of life, so
uh-huh.
to speak.
Sure.
And so forth. And now some people, that bothers some people. You know,
well,
that bothers.
It could, but see, the positive side of each of these things uh-huh. is that you gain some skills. Mascots are often hilarious. And if they are bringing, you know, joy and a sense of just kicking around at appropriate times, they're terrific.
Right, exactly.
It's only when it's supposed to be serious and needs to be serious that kind of behavior is a bit much.
Mm-hmm. And so, now the right kind of person for that, you know, right? Now with someone with a hero background, or because there's some people, you know, they have such a serious nature, everything is so serious that person now would wreck them.
Well, I think that, you know, where you get into it most is if either role is too stereotyped, if you have a huge mascot and a huge family hero who haven't worked out their stuff, that's going to get to be a real drag fast. And you could say the same with that with any of the combinations. Because what you're looking at is you're never going to eradicate everything, and you really wouldn't want to.
Okay.
What you'd want to do is get to the healthiest part of the role that you've learned, but be able to have access to all the other roles as well. We, as people, we should be as fully flexible and have access to all of us, and that would be a serious side and a rebellious side and a frivolous side. That they should all be a part of us.
And I also see that empathy is a strong position to have here too, because if you know you're with someone have was a scapegoat in their background, we just put energy, you know, we don't have to say anything, but we just put some compassion into them, and knowing we're not going to push the buttons as we'll bring that old devil out again.
Right.
We're not going to be the one, and so we're going to be more compassionate. And so, and that would, to me, would give the other person assurance that they're okay, and we're going to connect.
If we really, you know, if loving somebody is really knowing who they are, again, back to that I-thou relationship, you're going to be very respectful of who they are. You're going to see the positive parts. You're going to see the parts that were from somebody who was hurt. I don't even want to call them negative in that section, because all of these kind of difficulties come from too much of a chaotic life, and to have tasks that were way beyond them. So I can either react to the scapegoat or reassure them. I can take offense at the family hero, or I can try to reach the softer part within them. And I think it makes sense to reach the other part.
And I see that's where I'm glad you said, because that's where I was going to, is knowing what you have there and giving reassurance to that part of them.
Yes.
You see, and so then that to me enhances communication, your connection. And see, once you feel more connected, you open up. And so then when someone is talking to you, if your mate is talking to you, you're talking and you're completely open. You want to connect. You want to connect, and it's okay. And instead of, you know, being in that defensive kind of posture saying, oh, my God, what's coming next?
Absolutely.
You know, and you're saying, hey, you know, what is it? You got your ear there. You're connected. You're one. And the one thing I said in my promo emails is that we need to bind one and become one. Have that current, that electricity going between the two, flowing. And then we can actually hear and communicate and be okay and feel good after the communication is done, instead of saying, you know, that person just hijacked my conversation. I was trying to deliver a point, you know, and I think
exactly.
A lot of business, and I still, you know, I'm
yep.
unfulfilled here.
And that's really loving somebody. And they feel it. And then again, they'll tend to, you know, have a greater chance of responding to you that way. And you get a low maintenance relationship.
Ah, okay. Well, we're going to stop right there. I think this has been so very empowering and rewarding. And I want to get to my codependency section, which we're going to do a slight repeat of this. I'm going to give you a call back, and then we'll have some different kind of issues going on then, which is related, but it's a little different.
Sounds good.
And I'm going to call upon you then, and we're going to talk about that. Then we go into addictions, and we go into to really chart a new life for ourselves after addictions through our 12 principle process, and that comes up later on also. So in the meantime, I want to tell everybody that they can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/reconnected and hear the whole show. And we're having an increase. Matter of fact, we had 232 people, Jeff, that heard you last week.
Fun. Very fun.
The 232 as of Friday morning. And it's wonderful. And that tells me that this is important to people. They want to hear this. They want it. And they want to have improvement in their lives. And they're getting it. And they're getting it through our Reconnected show. And it's wonderful. So like one of the guests told me 2 weeks ago, is that this show is actually providing a global ministry, which I never thought of before. But a global ministry. And people are plugging in. And they're getting needed help right now without getting a bill at the end. And it's great. It's wonderful. And I'm sure
great.
Jeff has no problem with that. I have no problem with that. And
no.
After all, we get paid from a higher source anyway, and so it's okay. It's okay. No
you
problem
bet.
Here at all. So, Jeff, thank you for coming. And also, now, those who want to connect with Jeff, they can go to www.asktheinternettherapist.com, and you can find him. And he has a whole cadre of therapists and counselors who can help you in almost any aspect you want, whether you actually go into the office physically or do it online or over the phone. Is that correct, Jeff?
You betcha.
Okay, good. And he also has free things that you can download there. He has a lot of DVDs and different items that you can actually purchase online there. And if you forget all this, you can go on my show page, the Reconnected Show page, and Jeff is there under the comment column, and you can see him there with the website also. So sometimes we can't hear it all because it's too fast, or I'm talking too fast. But if you go to the show page, you can scroll down, and you can see it there, and you can get the help. Everybody get it. And if they get it directly from me, fine. I want to be a conduit. I want to be able to help everybody to whatever source and reference I can give them. I can direct people to Jeff or direct people to Makani or to Douglas Brown, Dr. Brown, or to other guests I've had, Applewhite Institute, or anybody that's been on the show. That's fine with me. I want folks to get it and realize the higher potential and the bigger self within them is already right there. We always have the bigger self inside of ourselves, and we know that and focus attention on that side of ourselves, we'll be in a better state to help ourselves and be a good inspiration to others. And that's where we are right there. So, Jeff, thank you again.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to
take
invite
care.
You to come, I invite you to come back on another time. And please come back again. Join us anytime you want to. Okay, Jeff?
Be happy to. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye, though.